Hello and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts. If you've listened to a few episodes and you're not following, feel free to do that. If you've been listening for a while and you've never rated and reviewed, that would be nice. All optional, of course, but thanks so much for tuning in. It means truly, truly so much. Love this podcast. It brings me so much joy. I swear to God, every week I do a disclaimer, but like my goal is to have episodes out on Wednesdays, but unfortunately I'm recording this Wednesday evening, so probably this episode will be out Thursday. My goal, I don't work Wednesdays, so I'm probably, as soon as I'm done recording, gonna spend the rest of the night editing this. So it should be out like tomorrow morning. I'll probably go to bed and have it scheduled for like 9 a.m. Pacific. So it'll be out like early in the morning. That's early for me. That's like noon Eastern, but like that's early for when my podcast typically releases. So that's the goal for this episode. Hopefully next week I'll have an episode out on Wednesday. I'm not feeling super well, like physically. So it took me longer because I could not like watch television. Like I couldn't rewatch and take notes because my head hurts so much. Like I just couldn't pay attention to things. Like I'm really not feeling the best physically. So that's why I'm a little delayed in recording. And hopefully once I get a recording, the editing shouldn't take me too long. I've gotten fairly good at getting into a rhythm with editing where it's really the prep that takes me more time. But as the title suggests, I will be recapping the Traitors finale. I'm going to share my brief thoughts on the reunion. I'm not recapping the reunion, but I have some things I want to mention that I want to talk about that came up at the reunion. And then from there, I'm going to share my thoughts on Yellowjackets season 3, episode 5. And I might, if I have time at the end, I want to talk very briefly about The Bachelor because I have some thoughts about this season that I haven't had time to really dive into because I've been so busy with this, like with other shows. But I think my Traitors recap is honestly going to be shorter than normal. So I'm going to get to it. I'm going to get to it this episode, I swear. It's the last thing I do. Okay, so episode 11, which was the finale of The Traitors, was called The Day of Reckoning is Upon Us. So we pick up where we left off, and I had said in my last episode that what I wanted to happen was that either Brittany voted Danielle or somehow they got Danielle out, and then they also got Brittany because I thought Brittany was going to banish Ivar, Danielle would stay in the game, and then maybe they would get Danielle out, but like Brittany would be in the end and Brittany would win. And I really didn't want that to happen. Like I just genuinely did not see a path forward. And I stand by this. I do still think that if Brittany hadn't banished Danielle here, Danielle wouldn't have won anyway. And then I just didn't want Brittany to win. Nothing against her, but she just didn't. I do not think that if you are a traitor for like one murder, you deserve to win as a traitor and take the money from everybody else. You know what I mean? If it had been Danielle and Brittany together in the end and they had shared the money, that would have been slightly different because, you know, like it was kind of like Danielle brought her in and like got her the money. It's kind of like somebody in Big Brother taking you to Final Two, you know? So like in that regard, I wouldn't have hated it if both of them split the money, but I just didn't see a path forward for Danielle. Like she had too much suspicion on her. I think she would have gotten out anyway. So I just didn't, I wanted the faithful to win. And I won this episode, I have to be honest. A lot of people were mad about the finale and the way things happened. I was happy. I was happy about it. I will be honest. Okay, So we pick up where we left off and Brittany, the tiebreaker vote, did vote to banish Danielle. So Danielle is banished. She says nice things to everybody before she reveals that she's a traitor, except Brittany. For Brittany, she just says, like, I can't believe you did this to me again, which is important because that comes up later. After Danielle is banished, Alan reveals that Brittany is the seer. She will pick someone for a private one-on-one meeting where she will find out if the person she chooses is a traitor or faithful. So we know Brittany's a traitor. So this is an interesting game mechanic, and it is especially interesting because Brittany's like, as a traitor, you can go two ways. Like you can frame somebody or you can like there are different strategies to how you can go about this. Dylan is beginning to suspect Brittany because of Danielle's speech when she exited. So it really, she kind of, and I don't know if she meant to do this. And I don't really, if this was a question at the reunion, I simply missed it. But I would have asked Danielle if that, like, to Brittany at the end was, like, a way to get her out later, because it's not uncommon for a traitor, as they're leaving, to throw another traitor under the bus to kind of, like, sink them as they're leaving. I wonder if that was somewhat intentional or if that was just purely emotional. She was upset. Like, did she genuinely be like, Brittany doesn't deserve to win, I'm gonna throw her under the bus? I don't know. I will say Brittany didn't really do herself any favors. She was just, and I understand that there's, like, the history of their relationship, but I feel like she should have been a little bit more relieved and happy, because a faithful probably would be, even if you feel betrayed or you feel bad that you betrayed them. At the end of the day, if you're faithful, you should be happy that you got a traitor out at the end. So I don't really know. Anyways, Brittany chooses Gabby for the seer meeting. There are a lot of jokes about the Bachelor and this being a date. And I loved that. Like, oh, where are the roses? I really loved that. I'm a Bachelor Nation person, so I was happy that Gabby got more screen time. Gabby was an important player. And I will say I was a little bit worried because Dylan, while they're in their meeting, we see the remaining three faithful talk about, like, what could happen. And Dylan very much is like, if Brittany says that Gabby is a traitor, then we get both of them out because there's suspicion on both of them. So I was worried that that's what was going to happen, that she would, like, throw Gabby under the bus to try to frame her. Because when she was going to pick somebody, I was like, she's probably going to pick Gabby to frame her, because they had been trying to frame Gabby at the last round table and it backfired. So I'm like, maybe this would work. I think it's also hard too, because I think it really depends on who's chosen to be the seer. Because I think if Dylan had been chosen to be the seer, I really think he could have very easily framed somebody, because it seems so, like, he doesn't seem like somebody who would frame somebody. So if he did say this person is a traitor and he was lying, I think everybody would believe it. Like, I think Brittany had more suspicion on her, where saying somebody was a traitor could seem suspicious, where I think there are people in the game who are the most faithful of the faithful, where it would be so odd for them to try to frame somebody just because of the way they've played, that you would believe them. You know what I mean? Like, I think Pilot Pete last season, if he had been like, this person is a traitor, I think everybody would have believed him. You know what I mean? Anyways, Gabby in confessional says she thinks that if Brittany is a traitor, she'll frame her as a traitor. So this is very much like what we're setting up. There's a card on the table that reveals that Gabby is a faithful. And now the big question is, what will happen the next morning? What will Brittany say about this interaction? Will she lie? Will she not? Dylan in confessional says that if Gabby's accused of being a traitor, they have to kill both of them, like, banish both of them to be safe. Dylan is the first in at breakfast. There's, like, they come in one by one and they kind of reminisce on their games and how happy they are that they got that far and yada yada yada. Dolores is in next and Ivar is in next, and they kind of, Ivar in confessional says he wants to go to the end with Dylan, so he hopes Dylan keeps him around. The three of them talk about what they think will happen, and Dylan hopes that Brittany says Gabby's a traitor so they can just get rid of both of them, because he thinks that'll kind of eliminate any suspicion of there being a traitor. If Brittany says that Gabby's a faithful, she probably is, and then they kind of need to figure out where to go from there, because he really doesn't think that's going to happen. Brittany and Gabby come in together, and Brittany tells the group that Gabby is a faithful. Gabby in confessionals says that she thinks Brittany wouldn't do this if she was a traitor. Dylan in confessionals is confused because he was certain that Brittany was a traitor and would throw Gabby under the bus to get the suspicion off of him, and then they could just eliminate both of them and be safe. So he's like, he didn't see this coming, so he doesn't know what it means. Brittany in confessionals recognized that by saying that Gabby was a traitor, it would make her look suspicious, and mathematically they would probably just banish both of them to be safe. And so she thought it would make more sense to be like, Gabby's a, like, to win some favor. Because if she says Gabby's a traitor, Gabby's like, I'm not a traitor, they're probably like, then it's more of a she said, she said. And who are they going to side with? Probably Gabby, who has less suspicion on her than Brittany. So it just makes more sense to be like, hey, we're all faithful here. No traitors left. But now Dylan is like, maybe they're both traitors. And Brittany brought Gabby in to be like, she's a faithful, in order to, like, he's thinking of all of the wider gameplay that could have gone into it. Like, if they're both traitors and you bring the fellow traitor in to be like, oh, no, she's a faithful. So then kind of like Brittany is trying to be like, there are no traitors left. So she doesn't get eliminated. Dylan's thinking of a scenario where they're both traitors, and Brittany brought Gabby in specifically to keep both of them safe by being like, there's no traitors left. You know what I mean? So it's like he's thinking about all of the possible scenarios that could lead to this, right? It's the last competition, the last challenge today, and then there's a final round table. And after that final round table, they go to the final fire. At this round table, they will not find out if the person they banished is a faithful or a traitor. Danielle was the last person they found out before the finale. Dylan is really confused. He thinks maybe they're both traitors. He's going through all the scenarios. Dolores gets brought up very, very briefly as like a potential suspect of a traitor, I think by Ivar, but that doesn't really go anywhere. But it is like a minor thing that's brought up. Dylan and Brittany then have a tense conversation, and she can sense that he's suspicious of her. In confessionals, he says that his strategy is to get her out at the round table. And then from there, they can decide at the final fire if there's like more people to get out. Brittany tells Gabby, then like Brittany and Gabby then have a conversation, and Brittany's throwing Dylan under the bus, saying he's acting weird, saying, I don't know if he's a traitor, but he's acting weird. The final competition is like a scavenger hunt type thing. They like go through the hills of they go through like the woods, the nature, and there are like hints that then lead them to their, it's a scavenger hunt. It's not that complicated. And then they collect money as they go. Then they get to like these really beautiful cars that each one of them is in their own car. There's a driver. They are not driving their cars, but, and they drive the cars back to the castle. They collect all the money. They drive the cars back to the castle. And Ellen then reveals that they have the opportunity to double their bags of money by throwing them from the helicopter into a ring of fire. However, they will not be doing it from inside the helicopter, but instead hanging below the helicopter. So they pair up in duos, except one, because there's five people left. So Ivar is just by himself, and they try to throw the money into the ring of the fire. I will be honest, I did not write down who doubled their money. I know Dylan and Gabby, they were together. They doubled some money. I don't think they did all of it. I don't think Ivar doubled any money. I don't know if Dolores and Brittany doubled any. They did manage to double some of the money. And by the end of the challenge, the total prize pot stood at $204,300, I think, was the total money at the end. I think they added like 34,000 something to the prize pot. So that's around how much they got that they doubled. Sorry that I didn't write down the exact amounts. After the challenge, Brittany is very much like going hard on the Dylan is a suspect train leading up to the round table. She's trying to convince people that Dylan will go after her. At the round table, Dylan accuses Brittany. Brittany accuses Dylan back. And it's honestly not her best work. Even he's like, I don't know why you're accused. Like, you came in very prepared with like a case. And she's like, I suspected that you were going to go after me, so I came prepared to defend myself against you, because why would you go after me if I'm a faithful? It means you're a traitor. Yada, yada, yada. I really did not buy at all in this round table that I really at this point was like, they're going to banish Brittany. It makes no sense. If they're smart, they banish Brittany here, because you don't get punished at all if you banish a faithful, but you do lose all the money if you don't banish a traitor. So it's just better safe than sorry and smart gameplay. You have to banish somebody at the final round table. You can't be like, no, like you can't decide to end the game there. It's not like the fire where up to four people can win. Like if you're there at the final round table, you need to banish somebody. And why not banish Brittany, who has some suspicion on her, versus Dylan, who is like a Hail Mary person that Brittany is throwing out in defense of herself because she is a suspect. Like, it makes no sense in this scenario to not banish Brittany, because you have to banish somebody. So like, you're gonna banish Dylan? No, you're gonna banish Brittany. I really, at this point, like, she did the best she could, but I really did not think that she was going to make it through this round table. My only question, honestly, for the end of this episode, after Danielle got banished, I was like, there were a few moments where I did think maybe Brittany would make it through. Like, I was like, maybe the seer power will save her. Like, it was a smart move on her part to not throw Gabby under the bus, because I think it bought her a little bit, if she hadn't had any level of suspicion on her, I do think it could have, like, helped her. I think there were just too many things working against her. But at this point, I was pretty confident she was going to get banished. And my only concern going into the final fire was, like, are they going to all split the money at the end? Or are they going to vote to whittle the numbers down like the faithful did last time? Where, like, they knew MJ was a faithful, but they still voted to keep banishing people. So then they could just, CT and Trishelle, I think, could just keep the money between them instead of splitting it three ways. Like, that was my concern going into the final fire. But anyways, let me keep going. The votes in order. Brittany votes for Dylan. Dylan votes for Brittany. Ivar votes for Brittany. Dolores votes for Brittany. Brittany has not been banished. And Gabby is the final vote, and she voted for Brittany as well. She's banished, but she can't reveal if she's a traitor or a faithful or not. Then we go into the final fire. And, like, leading up to the final fire, we see Alan have a conversation with each of the finalists parallel to the conversations he had when he was, like, before they decided the traitors, where we see Alan have these, like, conversations with the contestants and then them saying they want to be a traitor or a faithful. And this is kind of, like, about if they trust people or not. Like, there is very much a lot of buildup of, like, people still don't trust each other, kind of. You know what I think is interesting is I think this is the first season of the US version, at least. I've never seen any other versions of the traitors. I have seen all three seasons now of the US version, but I don't know if this is the first time ever they've done this, but in the US version, it's the first time there's a cutoff point where you don't find out if the people you banished are traitors. And I feel like somewhat they did it to, like, make people more suspicious at the end and keep banishing. Because, like, say you're at the final fire and you vote to banish somebody and you find out as they're leaving, like with Suri, for example. Although Ari kind of stepped away, but when he stepped away, they were suspicious at the end. Ari left, and then they were, like, worried that because he said he was like, I'm a traitor. I think at that point they fully trusted Suri and they were like, we're all good here, right? I wonder if he hadn't said if he was a traitor, like, maybe they would have kept voting. I think they wanted to have people be more suspicious and more paranoid that they weren't. I think that was part of the reason they did it. And it just backfired because none of them seemed to care. But there was a lot of buildup in the editing to make us wonder if they were going to prolong it. All their pouches, they throw their pouches into the fire. Dylan's is first, his is green. Ivar's next, his is green. Gabby's is next, hers is green. Dolores is the final pouch, and it's also green. So they've decided to end the game and split it four ways if there are no traitors there. They all go in the circle and reveal that they are faithful. They're splitting the money. Super slay. And they also find out then that Brittany is a traitor, so they got the last traitor out. I was super happy. I really wanted Gabby to win. A lot of people were upset about the finale because is it somewhat annoying to see the faithful win? Maybe. Does Ivar, like, not really deserve the money? Dolores also, like, didn't vote super well. Maybe, but it's, like, the reality is, like, maybe this is just me, but I unfortunately think this was my ideal outcome, to be honest, because I did not see a way, and I'm not trying to doubt her because I think she's a wonderful player, and she's, at least in the US version, the traitor to last the most roundtables without, like, before being banished. I think, I don't know, maybe they had less roundtables in season one, because I feel like Suri, if they had the same amount of roundtables, she made it all the way to the end. But, like, I guess maybe without winning. But, like, Danielle is one of the longest-lasting traitors. So, like, she played a good game. I don't think that she wouldn't deserve to win because she played a bad game. I just genuinely did not see a path forward where Danielle would have made it to the end. Like, I really, maybe I'm crazy, but I really did not think that they were going to keep Danielle around. And if they're not going to keep Danielle around, and the only way a traitor would win would be Brittany, I wouldn't be satisfied with that ending. And it's not even because I dislike Brittany. I like Brittany. I would have been happy as a Big Brother fan to have her win. I personally think as a viewer, it's a lot more satisfying to have the faithful win in this way than it would have been if Brittany won at the end. And I just didn't see a path where Danielle was going to win. I'm happy with the outcome, not just because Gabby Windy won, but because I really just didn't think Danielle would have made it through the last round table and then also the final fire, like, they would have kept voting. Danielle wouldn't have made it through. So, like, what are... Well, maybe I'm crazy, but I'm happy with the way it happened. I think it was a very satisfying ending. Would it have been really, really cool and amazing if Danielle won at the end? It would have been. I would have been very happy if Danielle won at the end. I'm also happy with the way it happened. I don't even care that Ivar and Dolores won. Like, I think... I don't know. I'm happy with the ending. I really am. Let me... What... I had some brief thoughts I wanted to share about the reunion. Okay, I have to be honest, I do not like that Andy Cohen hosts the reunion. It feels too slanted to the Bravo side. Like, he literally said to Dolores, like, you're the first housewife to win. It's like, Gabby Windy's the first person from the Bachelor franchise to win. But, like, that means nothing to him because he's from the Bravo verse. And I get it. I get that, like, Peacock, NBC, it's owned by, like, the same people who own Bravo. I get it. I don't like it. I have to be honest. There's just such a difference. As somebody who really likes reality TV and likes a wide range of reality TV, from competition shows like The Traitors to The Housewives and The Vanderpumps, and, like, I enjoy those shows as well. I'm not, like, anti-housewife by any means. I'm not, like, a purist where I think, like, competitive reality TV is, like, superior. I think all of those shows are interesting and require a certain skill. And I think what makes Traitors so interesting is that it brings people with different relationships to reality TV into this game. I think that's one of the most interesting things about the Traitors, is the dynamics of, like, all of these, like, the gamers versus the housewives. I think that's so interesting. My issue with Andy Cohen being the host of the reunion is that it feels like tonally it doesn't match up, because it's like, it's a, why are you asking Danielle about, like, swearing on her grandchildren and how she, like, reconciles with that? It's, like, so tonally different to the way that, like, gamer, like, he very much approaches it from, like, the Real Housewives, Bravo, that kind of tone of a reality TV perspective, which is very different than competitive reality TV, where I'm not saying you can do anything on reality TV, but, like, swearing on your grandchildren, like, there's just, like, a level that I don't like how slanted it feels towards, like, the Bravo verse. And I like Bravo. It's nothing against Bravo. It's just, like, why is your host being like, why did you kill off all the housewives? I don't like it. It feels like, I don't like it. I have to be honest. I don't like it. I have nothing against Andy Cohen. I've enjoyed the reunions he's hosted of the housewives that I've watched, of Vanderpump. It just feels like tonally it doesn't work, because this is a competition show and it's like he's doing it as if it's like housewives. I don't really know. Another thought that I had about the reunion, they read tweets that people said, and one of them was like, I hate to say it, but Tom Sandoval has redeemed himself. Like, you guys are losing the plot. Not that I think that anybody who listens to this podcast, because the only person I know who, like, regularly listens to this podcast and tells me she listens to this podcast is my sister. So not that I think any Emmy Awards viewers are feel this way, but I think we can recognize that Tom Sandoval is a very funny character on reality TV without saying he's redeemed himself. Like, and I even, like, the thing is, redeeming himself, like, he's irrelevant to me, so, like, he doesn't need to redeem himself. But, like, if somebody does very harmful, problematic things and they never really take accountability or seem to grow and change from it, are you really, like, they're redeemed, like, they're funny, they're all good now, you like them now because they were funny on reality TV? Like, can we not have some kind of nuance and understanding that, like, just because he was funny on reality TV doesn't mean he's, like, a good person who we should stan now? He's funny on The Traitors. I enjoyed him on The Traitors. I did. I don't think that that suddenly, like, redeems him. Because redemption to me feels like it's, like, washing away all of his sins. And I'm not saying that you should always hold him, like, his feet to the fire. Like, I'm not saying you have to hate Tom Sandoval forever because of what he did. It feels like a weird revisionist history where suddenly nothing he ever did, he's redeemed. I don't really think that we should be like, he's all good now if there's no growth, tangible change, accountability, any of that. That it really doesn't seem like he ever seemed to have. And I'm not super following it, but wasn't he, like, still in court or something, like, with Raquel? Like, let's not redeem Tom Sandoval just because we can be like, he was funny. We can say he was funny. We can appreciate what he brought to The Traitors. And even be like, Like when I'm sure there's a tweet of mine, if you go on my Twitter, of me saying, I hope they kill Sandoval first in the game, in the context of the game. I do not want Sandoval to die, of course, but like I did, it's a show where people get killed off. I was like, I hope they kill him first. Am I glad they didn't kill him first? Yes, I am. I have to be honest, I am. That doesn't mean that he's redeemed and I think he's a good person now. I never want Tom Sandoval on my TV in the context of a Vanderpump Rules, like following his daily life thing, because I do not think that Tom Sandoval is an enjoyable person to watch the interpersonal dynamic, like relationships. That made no sense. But it's like, there are some people that are like fun to watch their interpersonal dynamics and their life and their lives. And like, you know, they're fun to watch. They're interesting to watch. It's fun. Yes, there's conflict, but it's not like icky to watch. Tom Sandoval, watching his interpersonal relationships was a nightmare. Like he was so exhausting on that show as like a human being and the way he interacted with people. He was funny on The Traitors because the goal was not to show his interpersonal relationships. You know what I mean? Tonally, very different shows. So he was funny on this show. Like, are there people who I loved on reality TV, like as game players, who were so funny, who were so interesting, who I would probably like really not enjoy watching if it was like a reality TV show about their life and the way Vanderpump is? Yes, there are different tones. It's a different environment. So he was fun on this show, but he's not fun to watch when you're watching him like as a boyfriend, as a life partner, because he clearly is not the best at that. That's just my two cents. Another thing, again, that like what upset me about Andy Cohen being there is like Dorinda being so upset that she got killed and Bob the drag queen, like not knowing who she was and like all that. It's like, who cares? Who cares? I really, like, I wish we had like a game, like a host. Maybe they should do two hosts, somebody from like a more game, like a geared to the game, to the gamers, because it's like, what do you mean? It wasn't that deep. Same with the, like, you know what I mean? Anyways, sorry. They gave Danielle like a makeshift award, which I really liked. That brought me joy. Loved Ayin here. She said that they murdered her because she was the funniest one there. Loved that. All in all, very great season of The Traitors. Really enjoyed it. I think these early seasons of a show are so interesting to watch because things change and things evolve. And like, we're only really on season two of The Traitors US as it like functions, because season one had half reality TV people, half normal people, like regular civilians. So we're still early on in the game. I think the seer will change. They change, like, it's interesting to see the changes and even people's strategies. I feel like there was more of a vocabulary of, like, the gamers. Like, last season in the reunion, there was a lot of, like, tension of, like, we view it this way and you view it that way, where I feel like this time it was somewhat understood that the gamers were going to view the game in a certain way, where it was more just, like, not like, oh, I can't believe you see it this way. It's more like, okay, we're not going to see eye to eye from the beginning. You know, like, people were in categories from the beginning in a way that I feel like it wasn't like baseline in season two. I feel like it was kind of like discovered and established, and it was kind of like a tension, where I think going into this season, it was, we know the gamers versus the non-gamers. You know what I mean? It was like fractioned off in a way. It was like assumed. It wasn't as much of a conflict. It was just kind of like, yeah, we're viewing it differently. Anyways, very happy with the ending. So happy Gabby Windy won. I would like it on record that I was a Gabby Windy stan from her season of The Bachelor. Like, I was in the Gabby Windy camp, okay? I was rooting for Gabby Windy. Loved her from the beginning. Was so happy when she was The Bachelorette. Was so happy when she came out. And love her podcast. I'm a Gabby Windy stan. Were you guys here when Gabby Windy was being clowned for the amount of times she said yeah? Yeah. If you weren't here, I was there when the ancient texts were written, okay? I was a Gabby Windy stan. I even have a tweet of mine when her season was airing being like, Gabby Windy, if you're interested in women, I'm available. And then she came out. I love her. I love her. She is probably my favorite person from Bachelor Nation, like, ever. I love her so much. I remember when her season of The Bachelor was airing, any interviews they did, the cast, like, the contestants of that season were, like, anytime somebody said, who's the funniest, they always said Gabby. I loved her from the beginning. I remember my sister even said to me, and it's one of the nicest things I've ever been told. My sister was like, I mean, I feel like if you ever went on The Bachelor, you would be like the Gabby of the season. Nicest thing she's ever said to me. And you know what? That's so true. I always said, I'm not straight. I don't know how I identify, I gotta be honest. But I was always like, I imagine myself going on The Bachelor and like sending myself home somewhat early on, because I'd be like, you know what, I don't think I want to pursue this. I would rather date a woman. That is always how I saw myself. Because you know what, I will be honest, I do not know how I identify. Because the thing is, okay, I'll get off this really, really quickly, because who cares about me, Emmy Cardinale? But I will be honest, I have like such a like lack of interest in dating men. And I don't know if it's because I'm genuinely not interested in men, or if it's because of like trauma and certain boundaries that I have, where I'm like, I have certain experiences where I'm like, I literally never want to date a man again. And so I don't know if I'm like just gay or if I'm traumatized. So I just don't identify as a lesbian, because I don't know. Like right now I'm just kind of open, and I'll figure out, like, I'm just open to people right now. And maybe one day I'll have a more firm like label on my identity, but right now I just don't know. I'm open to whatever happens. So, but anyways, it's just so funny to me, because I always said that, and then Gabby went on the show and my sister was like, if you would be the Gabby of the season, just because of how funny she was. And then she came out and now she's a lesbian, and I'm like, you know what, this is, I'm so Gabby Wendy-coded. Again, I'm not saying that I identify as a lesbian. I do not know how I identify. I identify as queer with a heavy lean towards women, though. I'm really not interested in dating men, but that's just because I don't like men. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, do I not want to be around men because I just don't like men, or am I gay? I don't know. I mean, I do know I like women. Like, it's not like I hate men, but I'm straight. I know I'm not straight. Like, I know I like women and I'm attracted to women and I would love to date a woman or non-binary people. I'm open to everybody. Men I'm less open to, just because they piss me the fuck off. You know, I found out, sorry, last tangent, and then I'll move on to Yellow Jackets. I found out once that there was like a study that when men say they want a woman with a sense of humor, they mean a woman who finds them funny. Whereas when a woman says they want somebody funny, they mean somebody who makes them laugh. Men want somebody who laughs at their jokes. I don't want to date a man who thinks he's funnier than me. I have to be the funny one in the relationship, okay? That is my... I'm not completely closed off to dating men. I'm just not really super interested in it either. I say that. I'm not pursuing anything because dating it feels too exhausting. In my ideal world, I'm like friends with somebody and like we get to know each other on like a, they like me as a human being. Like, I hate dating apps. Seriously, last tangent, sorry. I hate dating apps because I hate the weird baseline of like it being like romantic from the beginning. I don't like that. I want to know that somebody likes me because they enjoy my personality, and then like it can go from there. And I know that's like never gonna happen because I don't get out of my house, but I really just like do not have the energy to like date somebody, because like the thing is, I find it so confusing when people are like trying to date me from the beginning. It's like, you don't even know me. And I get that. Okay. I mean, move on. Anyways, love Gabby Wendy. So happy she won. Dolores, loved her on the season. Dylan Efron, totally deserved. Love an Aquarius king. Ivar probably doesn't need the money, but he was a hoot. I liked him better than the other British guy they had last season. I wonder if they're going to have like some kind of just British figure of like, last time it was somebody from Parliament. This time it was like a royal. Like, are they just going to have somebody like that every season? I liked Ivar more than the John guy. There was nothing wrong with John. Like, I didn't dislike him, but Ivar was funny. I'm happy with the winners. Would I have preferred if it was just like Gabby and Dylan? Maybe. But I'm happy with Dolores winning, and Ivar was funny too. And I love the fact that they all committed to, we're faithful, so we're not going to keep voting out of pure greed to split the money. I like that. It made them seem even more faithful. Like, they really accomplished their mission. They got all of the traitors out. The most faithful that have ever won. Gabby Wendy won. Couldn't be happier with the season outcome. I mean, me personally. Okay. So episode 5 of Yellow Jackets, I'm going to do the adult timeline first, share my thoughts on that, and then I'll talk about the teen timeline. So Lottie's dead, as we know. We see Misty going to the morgue to confirm that it's Lottie. the Simone Cassell was, it was, we didn't see Simone Cassell. We didn't see adult Lottie. We saw, she imagined a teen Lottie. And then she became teen Misty, which I like when they do this. I have nothing against it. But it did make me kind of sad that, like, we can't even see Simone Cassell. I'm at this point, I know I said last episode that I was like, she's not actually dead. I know she's dead at this point. I've accepted it. As sad as it makes me, I've accepted it. I know Lottie Matthews is gone. Now I'm in the acceptance phase. She's gone. I'm sad about it. It is what it is. But I liked that scene. It made me sad. What more can I say? This episode in the adult timeline, the main crux of the plot, like last episode, it was very much Jeff trying to repair his karma. This episode, it's like that they're trying to figure out what happened to Lottie, right? Lottie's death is a mystery. So Misty takes it upon herself to figure out what happened. She tells the other adult survivors that Lottie is dead, and they don't really believe her. Shauna then accuses her, which I didn't really like. Not like from like a, because there are issues that I take with, like, I didn't like this as like a narrative in the story. Like, why did they write it that way? Versus, I just didn't like that the character did that. I didn't like that Shauna did that. I think it makes sense for her character, and I understand the way that it then facilitated the rest of the dynamics of the episode. Misty is determined to find out what happened for Lottie and also for Natalie, because that's what Natalie would have done for Lottie. I cried. Shauna follows Misty. Walter follows Shauna. And then Walter and Shauna team up, and they're like a dynamic duo. Teamed up together, and Misty's just alone. There's a competition to... There's a moment that I really want to talk about where eventually Misty goes to the place where Lottie died, and we find out that it was her dad's building, like her dad lives there. We also get background on Lottie's childhood, where she lived there with both her parents, and then her parents got a divorce, and that's when she moved to New Jersey. But her dad stayed in the penthouse. It's interesting to me that we didn't have context that Lottie's parents were divorced, I don't think, before this episode. It always seemed like they were together in the glimpses we got of Lottie's past, but it was also never like explicitly like they're together. It doesn't seem, especially like her dad chartered a plane, it doesn't seem super far off that like her dad is like a distant father. She lives with her mom. None of that seemed too out of the ordinary for me. It didn't seem like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. We like, it wasn't explicit that they were together or anything like that. They clearly weren't like, anyways. So like, that wasn't crazy to me. I will say, Lottie dying in the basement of her like childhood building makes the fact that it was like a vision she had in season one feel a little bit less like powerful to me. It adds like a layer, but it's like, it's not like she was imagining herself in a place she'd never been where she would then die, which is what I originally thought. It's like, when she was imagining this, it was like a place she had connection to. And yes, obviously she died there, so it was like, it's still an important parallel and vision she had. But it's like, it's just interesting too, because I feel like it just makes it seem even less like, oh, some kind of like premonition, and more like, you know, trauma and all of these things. But I don't know. Anyways, Shauna and Walter kind of team up. Misty goes to Lottie's building and finds out that Lottie's been living with her dad. Misty goes to Lottie's dad and goes like up to try to scope out the place. Walter and Shauna are already there posing as like a Wi-Fi company or something to fix his internet. But there's a moment where Misty is in Lottie's childhood bedroom, and she finds Lottie's phone, but it's been completely wiped. And Walter is like, checkmate, like, I got there first. I'll give you the contents. And Misty is kind of like, she says, I can't believe I ever let somebody as despicable as you give Caligula a bath. And it's interesting because I like Walter, and I do understand why he would think that Misty would like a challenge. But I really think there's a fundamental... there's like a deep misunderstanding of Misty here and the connection she had and has to these women who she went through this traumatic experience with. Because it's like, while I do think Misty wants to find out what happened to Lottie, I think this isn't a citizen detective like case that she's solving purely out of the curiosity that Walter is kind of trying to fuel and like get her. It's not like, it's not the same kind of thing. I think he's missing the deep personal implications for Misty of this case. And so he's kind of, the tone he's approaching this with, I think, is lacking a little bit of that like compassion and understanding that while, yes, this is a case that Misty wants to solve because she is a curious person who wants to solve cases, it's also a very deeply personal, like, she's grieving somebody. She just lost another friend. Lottie and Natalie died like 6 weeks apart from each other. Like, Misty hasn't gotten like a break in like, a lot's changing in her life. Like, I don't know. That made me really sad for Misty. And I, like, the thing is, I get that Walter is trying to do this because he thinks that'll be like more fun and challenging for Misty. I think that, like, I don't know. Van and Ty's reaction to Lottie being dead is interesting. Van is really like, can't believe it. Like, honestly, me too, Van. Van's like, no, she can't be dead. She's Lottie. Me when I saw her dead at those stairs, I was like, it's fake. Ty is really not having like a very deep reaction to Lottie being dead. Van is suspicious of Ty though. She's like, where were you yesterday? You took an awfully long time to get to the park. We also see Sammy and Simone meet up with Ty. And she brings Van. Like, Van's there. It's so weird. And Sammy immediately clocks that it is not Ty. That it's other Ty. And you can tell. You can tell. Because Sammy has always known. Sammy's always known. There have been moments where before Ty realized that she was sleepwalking again, there would be moments where, like he drew things about the woman in the tree. He'd say things like, you're the other one, or you're the good one, or something along those lines. Like, Sammy knows. Sammy senses. And when he's like, are you not my mommy anymore? I 1000% think that that was him being like, your other Ty. Not him being like, oh, you've abandoned me. You're not spending time with us. 100% he could recognize that that was other Ty. And he was upset about it. Rightfully so. Because that's not his mom. That's some random woman who eats dirt in a tree. Oh, poor Sammy. Glad to see that Steve is alive and well, though. So happy that Steve was there and he's alive and well. Another important or interesting moment from the Walter, Shauna, Misty dynamic. Walter, like, proposes. He, like, offers Shauna a piece of, his, like, some of his DNA. She doesn't take that. He takes some of her DNA off of, like, the hat she was wearing because they were wearing these fake costumes of, like, they work at a Wi-Fi place or whatever, like, tech support. And so he took her DNA. He'll probably test her. I don't think that Shauna killed her. I don't think Shauna killed Lottie, so I don't think that'll, like, really do anything. But in a really interesting scene, and probably, like, my favorite of the episode in terms of the teen, of the adult timeline, is at some point Shauna's in Lottie's room. And Lottie's dad comes in and he pictures Shauna as Lottie. Now, some people were like, oh, pre-crash Lottie, post-crash Lottie. That's not my interpretation of the scene and what I think is right. Like, I'm like, my interpretation, I think that's just what happened. That's not like a real conversation that happened. Her dad was talking to, Lottie's dad was talking to Shauna as if Shauna was Lottie. So he was imagining her as Lottie. Maybe it was reminiscent of conversations they'd had in the past, but I don't think it was like a flashback. I think it was Shauna responding to him as if she was Lottie because he was imagining her as Lottie. So it's not post Lottie or it's like an imaginate. It's like a, the way her dad remembered her, but it was really beautiful and really sad. And I really liked that Shauna did that. I also really liked Shauna when she's in Lottie's bedroom before Lottie's dad starts talking to her. She has all these glimpses of Lottie and, like, you really see the pain on her face of, like, feeling Lottie's death in a way that I really liked because I love Lottie and it makes me sad that her death is kind of like a mystery more than it's like an opportunity for them to mourn. And it was nice to even, like, briefly see that. But that's all I have to say about the adult timeline. If I think of anything else that I forgot to mention, I'll bring it up later. But moving on to the teen timeline. So the main question is, like, what will happen to Coach Ben, right? Coach Ben is, like, still in jail, their little makeshift jail with the goats. One of the goats is like an orphan now. He mentions that the goat probably isn't weaned. We also find out that Ben's mom fostered kittens. And I did soften up to Ben a little bit because of this fact. Because if you don't know me, I foster kittens. And as soon as he said, oh, she isn't weaned, I was like, that's... I immediately thought of kittens because I foster kittens. And sometimes they're weaning, they're weaned, you know. I've never fostered bottle babies, but I have gotten kittens that are like freshly weaned are still weaning, so you mix some formula into their food because they're still teeny, teeny, tiny. So like, that was the first thing I thought of. And then when he said weaned, he was like, my mom fostered kittens. I love that of Ben's mom. But basically, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with him because they've decided he's going to die. But they're like, how will he die, right? So Shauna wants to burn him because that's what he wanted to do to them. Natalie is like, that's torture, okay? We're not going to burn him alive. So then they settle on a firing squad and they will decide with the cards the same way they pick everything. Natalie's like, the same way it'll be the queen, but then Vane is like, it should be the king of hearts because that's the suicide king, whatever the fuck that means. Is that like a poker thing? I don't know anything about what cards mean. Interesting cards that people get. Lottie gets a five, I don't remember of what, and that was her jersey number. Shauna gets a 9, which is Jackie's jersey number. And then Ty gets the King of Hearts, so Ty has to kill him. And Ty really doesn't want to. She's, like, practicing missing the shot really in her head. And Van is like, what if you don't have to do it? What if we get other Ty to do it? She doesn't say other Ty, but she's like, you know, when you sleepwalk, there's, like, other version. Like, we can bring out that other version of you. Something along those lines, right? An interesting comment. When she's practicing to the like her shooting ability, Ty says, what if I miss and hit his other leg? And then Van says, then he'll really want to die. That's important for something I want to bring up later. But basically the whole Van and Ty are trying to figure out a way to get other Ty out, right? So Van suggests that they have sex, that they have sex to get other Ty out. And while this was a very, like, love the gay sex scenes, truly, it was a weird suggestion to me because maybe, one, like, it feels inaccurate. Like, maybe it was just meant to be like, was she really serious or did she just want to have sex with Ty? I don't know. Because maybe I'm wrong, but, like, that doesn't feel true. Like, the only times we've seen other Ty come out in relation to sexy Ty, what did I say like that? In relation to them, like, having sex was, like, at night. So it wasn't even, like, the sex triggered it. Like, it wasn't like, oh, Ty, like, you know, was very, very aroused and that, like, got her into that other state. That's not what happened. She was just asleep. And you know what I mean? Am I wrong? But also, it's a little weird. Like, I found it a little odd. I found it a little odd to be, like, there's this other version of you, right? It's like, they don't say it's a dissociative state, but it kind of, like, it's, you know, she's not present. So it's like, you want to kind of, like, render her unconscious by having, like, sex with her. Feels weird. It doesn't work. They have sex, but it doesn't, she doesn't, like, again, it's not because it doesn't feel connected to me. Love him getting it on, but it does not get other Ty out. After they've had sex, though, they hear, like, one of their traps, and it's a bunny, and this scene made me sad because they're killing a bunny. But, like, they talk about the wilderness needing blood, so then they kill the bunny and use, like, mindfulness techniques. Like, Lottie's, like, the whole thing of, like, Lottie's a cult leader, it's like, I did those kind of mindfulness techniques all the time in, like, group therapy, where it'd be, like, we'd watch a video or something, or, like, we would do something, and then we had to, like, describe, we had to, like, pay attention to, like, our feelings and the sounds around us and, like, the way our body was reacting to things. Like, it's just about mindfulness. Obviously, it's a cult-y thing in the wilderness. But, like, anyways, so she kind of does that where she's, like, she talks about the bunny and feeling it like, die, basically, in a way that I thought that scene was really interesting. But that's all I have to say about it because it will make me sad. The next thing I want to mention is Melissa and Shauna and their dynamic. So Melissa brings Shauna, like, a gift. It's like a, I don't know what the word for that is, but it's like a place to keep her knife. Sheath? Is that, that's not it. Something like that, though. Like a place, like a knife cover. I don't know. Anyways, she brings her that gift, which was very nice of her. And then Shauna was like, why do you even like me? And she's like, you say that like there's nothing about you to like. Like, yes, Jackie kind of was mean to you and Jeff treated you like you were a secret. But like, I like that you've embraced the less than good parts of you yourself out here or something along those lines. And it's like, it's a nice moment. Okay. I know last episode I was really anti-Melissa, and I'm not even like, I saw a tweet that was like, why are people so mad? Like, why do people hate Melissa suddenly? Like, what has she done? And I will say for me personally, a big reason, I think, I have to be honest, if Lottie hadn't died and it didn't feel like they were bringing in adult Melissa, I would honestly be less upset about Melissa in the teen timeline. I like that we're seeing that side of Shauna. I really do. Like, I like the dynamic between them. For me, it just bothers me because I feel like it's building up to Melissa being alive in the adult timeline. And it feels like they're just, like, replacing Lottie with another survivor. And it's significantly, like, no hate to Melissa. But Melissa, to me, right now is interesting because of what she's bringing out in Shauna. She's, like, an interesting, like, more than a character, she feels like a plot device to further Shauna's character in a way that I enjoy. I'm not against it. It just bothers me because I shouldn't connect the two, but I'm like, if they're bringing in another adult survivor and it's Melissa, I'm going to be annoyed at that. Like, I just am. I'm sorry. I like Shauna. I really like Shauna's storylines. I find them really interesting, but there's a lot there already with Shauna. We don't need to bring in her ex-girlfriend to further adult Shauna's storyline. I don't like it. Like, I don't like it. I'll have to see how it happens. But like, that's the biggest reason that I'm hesitant of Melissa, because I said this in my last episode, but one of the most interesting things about Yellow Jackets is that it's not just about the survival situation. We get an adult counterpart for many of the girls, and I don't like that they're killing off the adult counterparts, because the fascinating thing of the show is seeing the parallels and the way the trauma has impacted them all these years later. And it would just really, really be frustrating to me as somebody who was a big fan of Lottie for them to kill her off and then bring in, and I really don't mean, maybe this sounds mean, but Melissa feels like Shauna's sidekick, and I don't want them to kill off Lottie, who is a character who's really interesting in her own right. Again, and I'm not saying Melissa can't be, but like, right now she's there to further Shauna's story. It's like, I just, anyways, that's why I don't like Melissa. I do actually find their dynamic in the teen timeline interesting. I've nothing, like, it's really interesting. I like seeing Shauna's relationship to like romance, and like, and obviously this isn't like a romance for the ages. It's very much intertwined with like violence and like trauma, and like, they're obviously, but we haven't seen Shauna in any kind of like relationship in any capacity besides the one with Jeff, the homoerotic tension with Jackie that people point out. Like, I like seeing the side of Shauna. I do. I think it's giving an interesting, I think it's an interesting arc for Shauna. I really do. I enjoy that. I'm just annoyed that it feels like if Hilary Swank is not Melissa, then when I rewatch this season, I will honestly, I think, soften a little bit to teen Melissa. I'm really mad at the idea of Melissa being the final survivor. That's my truth. I'm sorry. Melissa's like not interesting. There's so many, like, Akilah is such an interesting character in her own right. Like, not even, like, there's obviously a lot of really interesting Akilah scenes so far this season with other people, and like the role she's playing with Lottie's cult, and like the Lottie Travis Akilah dynamic is obviously really interesting, which I'll get to in a second. But Akilah's a really interesting character in her own right, and Melissa has just kind of been like a side character with not a ton of stuff fleshed out about her. And it would be annoying to me if they killed off Lottie, such an interesting character. Like, right now it feels like Lottie in the adult timeline is being used as a plot device, and that just upsets me as somebody who really likes her character. And so it bothers me that we're maybe losing, there was more story there to tell, and it's like, what, for Melissa? And again, maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself. I don't hate the Shauna Melissa dynamic and what it means for Shauna in the teen timeline. I really don't. I'm just a little salty because I'm like, why are we seeing so much of Melissa? when they just killed off Lottie. Like, I will admit that a lot of my reactions to Melissa are in the wider context of the, like, conflicted feelings I'm having about the season, more so than it is about, like, what Melissa and Sean are really, the content themselves that they're giving me. Moving on. So they've decided that Ben's going to be killed. Misty gives Coach, like, a last supper, and this scene broke my heart when Misty was really sad about Coach dying and how she didn't do enough. I love Misty. I love Misty. Like, I really don't hate many of the characters, because even when I don't like them, I feel like they're interesting characters that help move the plot along. Like, even, I have to be honest, Van is not my cup of tea. Van is not my cup of tea. In the teen timeline, she pisses me off. I'll be honest. But I like Van as a character. I do. I just, I'm annoyed by her more than I am by other characters. So I understand why people are like, Lottie pisses them off. Like, they just don't vibe with her, and that's fair to me. It just, I feel like people are very extreme, or even if, like, Van is not a character that I personally, she pisses me off a lot. But I don't, like, hate her or think she's evil in the way that a lot of people, like, end up, like, really moralizing the characters that they just don't vibe with. Anyways, but Misty, I love her. Adult Misty, teen Misty, I have a soft spot for Misty. She destroyed the black box, okay? You're welcome. You're welcome for Misty. Without her, we wouldn't have a show. Anyways, I love Misty. That made me really sad. And I was really, for a second, I was like, aw, Coach Ben. Maybe I'll tear up a little bit when you die. Like, I was really, last episode, I was like, kill him. And this episode, I was like, aw, maybe he deserves to live a little bit longer. Okay, the next thing I'm going to talk about is Lottie, Akila, Travis, and the cave and everything, because this is super important. So throughout the episode, Lottie is like kind of preparing Akila to go to the caves. Travis is a little bit hesitant. They go to the cave, right? When they're going into the cave, Akila's like, isn't this kind of stupid? Like, we're just getting high off of the gas and like seeing things. And Lottie says, I think it's like a conduit. It's like the Oracle of Delphi. And I was like, oh my God, I've said this before. I'm on record somewhere. Maybe I never like wrote it down on Twitter, but I'm like, Lottie Matthews, if she had grown up in the 2000s, like when I did, I'm like, she would have been a Percy Jackson kid. And I just know it. Like, I just know she would have read Percy Jackson and been like, this is so relatable to me. And when she mentioned the Oracle of Delphi, I was like, oh my God, so true. She is the daughter of Apollo. Apollo himself bestowed the prophecy, bestowed the power of the prophecy on Lottie Matthews. But anyways, Akila goes into the cave. Travis has a bad feeling about it. She passes out. It seems like she's gonna die. Travis is like, we shouldn't have done this. She comes to. Akila lives. And I think this is a really important, I very much always try to take the information we learn as the teen timeline progresses and like connected to little points and moments that we got of the adult timeline, even from like season one, or maybe it was season two when they revealed, Lottie revealed that Travis like wanted to like get as close to death as he could so he could connect to the wilderness. This is like another example of somebody in the teen timeline like getting close to death and connecting to the wilderness. So that was important to me because I'm like, okay, all of these are like data points that I'm building that fit the general narrative of like Travis's death, all of those things. So like that was really interesting to me. But then Akila, the dream she had was that she was on a cliff and then she looked down and she was on Coach Ben. He was like his body was huge. We see it. We see Coach Ben as a bridge. And then in the distance, she like sees, it looks like city lights. It seems like New York, right? And she says she felt hopeful. So Lottie takes this to mean that he is the bridge home. He's the bridge home. It's now time for Ben's execution. They kidnap him from the little goat jail where he is. He's there. They're getting ready to shoot him. He like pleads for them. He like begs them. He's like, please don't kill me. They cover his head so they don't have to look at his face. Natalie puts the necklace on him and she's like having a hard time looking him in the eye. And he says, you're going to have to look me in the eye, which parallels when she said that to Shauna, when Shauna was like going to kill her before she ran. And then Javi died instead in her place. Anyways, Coach, that's an interesting thing. He like pleads for his life. They cover his head. As Ty is ready to shoot him, other Ty takes over. Van notices that his other tie interesting, and the adult timeline Van has seems to not like not notice at all when it's other tie. Sammy can, but anyways, Lottie, Travis, and Akila arrive. Travis pushes Ben to the ground. The shot goes off, but it doesn't hit him. And Lottie's like, "You can't kill him yet. He's our bridge home. He's our bridge home. He has meaning." So he's not dead. They're not killing him yet. He's back in the goat jail. And the episode ends with Melissa and Shauna go to the little goat jail. And he's like, Lottie said you couldn't kill me. So Shauna gives her knife to Melissa and is like, "You do it." And Melissa's like, "I can't do it." And she's like, she says the same thing that Melissa said to her about like embracing the parts of yourself that aren't all good or whatever. And Melissa then cuts his Achilles tendon for his other leg, which is why when I was rewatching the episode and Ty said, like, "What if I miss and I hit his other leg?" And Van was like, "Then he'll really want to die." That, like, in the preview for the next episode, episode 6, we see him, like, begging to die. So I think they're going to continue to torture him. He yells, obviously. It's really, really sad. I did feel bad for Coach Ben here. Natalie says, "You don't have to enjoy it so much." And Shauna says, "You don't have to act like such a fucking saint. So that's basically, I think, going into next episode, they're going to, like, I think Ben is going to be, I don't think it's going to be, like, the next day. Like, I think they will have been torturing him for some while. And he's, like, ready to die. And I think he will die at the end of this episode. I don't really know. Those are my thoughts on Yellow Jacket season 3, episode 5. What else do I want to talk about? I did want to talk about The Bachelor very, very briefly. Season 29. Season 29 of The Bachelor, Grant's season. I haven't covered this at all because I've been covering the Traitors and Yellow Jackets, and I just like, but in terms of like the people left, I don't have many opinions. I think right now, as recording this, because I'm recording this Wednesday the 12th in the evening. So the last episode that we saw was The Women Tell All, and I have some thoughts about The Women Tell All, but I want to talk very briefly about the final three and what I think is going to happen in the finale. So I think probably Grant is going to be really torn between, Zoe is in the final three, but she's, let's be real, he's not picking Zoe. Zoe will go home after Fantasy Suites. He'll have a really hard time between Latia and Juliana, but I think the Mormon thing is going to get him, and I don't blame him. Like, I see a lot of people being like, if he doesn't pick Latia, like, I'm going to be really upset. And I feel like we've kind of lost the plot on Mormonism, because, like, I understand that Mormons are kind of in right now with the, like, Mormon wives and, like, Salt Lake City, like, the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City were really big. Like, but we need to really remember, like, how extreme Mormonism is. Like, I feel like people have forgotten what Mormonism is because, you know, it's, like, all the fun, the sodas, the swingers. It's, like, the actual, like, Mormonism is really strict. Like, let's be real. That's going to be a big deal, okay? They don't even drink coffee, okay? Whatever. So I don't think he's going to pick Latia. I think he's going to pick Juliana. Whether he's with her now, I don't know. And I am completely unspoiled. I know nothing. That is simply my guess. In terms of The Women Tell All, I really wanted to talk about that because I've been kind of very annoyed at the way people have been treating Carolina. And I said this on my TikTok. But people on The Bachelor, the contestants on The Bachelor, will get mad at each other about things that the producers are the ones who are dictating. I'm like, why are you getting mad at each other? Like, why are you getting mad at each other? It's literally the producer's fault. Like, it's literally, they're trying to pit you against each other. Oh, like, they're mad that, and it's just, okay. My biggest issue with, like, the way that they all treated Carolina is that it feels like Carolina's, I have a lot of, like, empathy for her because it feels like Carolina's crime is being, like, a little bit negative and unpleasant. And, like, yes, that can be upsetting, but it feels really, really frustrating to me that they vilify her for being, like, upset or overwhelmed or, like, skeptical of the process or, like, struggle with the emotions. Like, maybe you can think it's annoying. You all signed up for it. You wish you had the amount of time that she had with Grant. So, like, her complaining seems ungrateful to you and, like, annoying. But there's, like, no compassion, it feels like. Because if I was in that situation, even if I was, like, I wish I had the amount of time that Carolina had with him. There's a level of like, yes, that is annoying, but also her feelings are completely valid. Like, I don't know. in college, I struggled a lot academically. It would be difficult sometimes if I knew people who were upset, like if people were upset and they were like, I'm upset that I got a B that I didn't get straight A's because I really wanted to get straight A's. I would have a moment in my brain where I'm like, I wish that that was the struggle that I was having. Like, I wish that I got a B. Like, I'm barely passing my classes with my full course load and no accommodations. Like, I would be like, but if somebody was complaining to me, I wouldn't make it about me and be like, well, at least you're getting a B. You know what I mean? It's like, you have to have, like, perspective and be like, somebody's struggle does not take away from mine. And I guess in this situation, it does somewhat because, like, the more time they get, the less time you get. But it's also just, like, not up to you and not even fully up to them. Even if they took time away from you, like, the producers are the one who end dates early. They're the ones who decide if you get to talk to the lead there. They're the one who gets to decide if somebody gets more time. All of these things, hell, they even choose who goes on dates. It's really not the other contestant's fault. And it's just like, it would have been so, I feel like it would go a long way if they were like, you have the right to feel that way. That's a little bit annoying for me to hear or something. Or even just like, it's the way they like vilified her and made her seem like she was like mean or bad for being upset. You were just annoyed with her. Being annoying is not like a crime that in my opinion warrants the amount of like, they're like, take accountability, Carolina. I really take accountability for what? Like, maybe I'm crazy, but it's like they want her to take accountability for the fact that she was like upset sometimes, that she was negative, that she like didn't interact with them. All of the things that they took issue with, in my opinion, weren't big deals. And I think the way she was received was like the punishment did not fit the crime. It just didn't. Like the amount of hate she got for the like everything that transpired was disproportionate and unfair, and I will ride for Carolina. And I also think Dina really bothered me. I was really, really annoyed because going into the Scotland episode, the episode before Hometowns, Dina posted a TikTok, which they did address in Women Tell All, of being like, when you gave the person that nobody trusted a chance just for it to like fall back on you or something, right? Carolina was understandably upset because she felt like that was shady, and I felt like that was shady. I was like, this is so weird. Like in the last episode, last we see, I guess she thought she was teasing the episode, but it's like objectively like, oh, I was wrong to defend Carolina is basically the message of that TikTok. I was so baffled that the episode she was teasing happened the way it did, because it's like you posted that shady TikTok months later. After the last we see you and Carolina on screen, she's apologizing to you and you're burying the hatchet. You get a hometown. She goes home because of something you said, but you're the one shading her on TikTok. I was blown away. I was like, that made no sense to me. I'm like, you had the audacity to shade her on TikTok after you got, like, you truly unnecessarily threw her under the bus. Carolina did nothing to Dina to warrant Dina throwing her under the bus in the way. Let's think back to the way Carolina's final episode happened. Carolina was upset because she could very, very clearly tell that he was moving farther along than the other. He was moving farther along with other relationships than he was with her. Plus, the other women didn't really like her. Whether that was justified or not, it's really unpleasant being in a group of people you feel don't like you, even if you did something to warrant them disliking you. That's really negative. Like, she went up to him and she basically was like, I don't know why I'm still here. And he convinced her to stay. He could have sent her home then. I don't understand how anybody watched that episode and genuinely thought that, like, Dina was in the right. Like, I was so confused after that episode that Dina had the nerve to, nerve is a little bit strong, but that Dina, like, went on TikTok to be like, oh, I was wrong to defend Carolina there, when, like, Carolina's crime was being a little bit pouty and negative and, like, taking time away from you, quote unquote, which, again, she has no control over. The producer sent her in. Grant pulled her aside, probably because the producers were like, Carolina looks upset, you should pull her aside. Carolina had no control over that. Carolina had no control over when they ended the date. The fact that they strategically ended the date after Carolina got time with them and the rest of them didn't, to further upset them. All of that was producer manufactured. That was not on Carolina. Then Dina, that pissed her off so badly that Carolina got extra time, again, not on Carolina, that she threw Carolina under the bus and basically took Carolina's hometown away from her. Like, Dina basically got Carolina's hometown taken away from her. Because I don't think maybe he wasn't going to take her to hometowns, but, like, why wouldn't he have sent her home then? I don't know. The whole thing pissed me off. The fact that at the women tell all, they were just ganging up on Carolina. The fact that Ali Jo had to, like, chime in and be like, you never spoke to me, as if that warrants the amount of, like, ganging up on her that they got. Like, nobody brought up the fact that it was kind of shady of Rose to bring that up. Whatever. I'm Team Carolina. I feel like they were unfair to her. At the end of the day, if you are getting mad at a fellow contestant because they took more time away from you guys, instead of realizing that that is not something that falls squarely on their shoulders, and that to you, like, if that, what Carolina did at that group date, which was be a little bit upset, like, be in a bad mood, if you will, quote unquote, and then get more time with Grant, because Grant pulled her aside, again, probably because the producers were like, Carolina looks upset, you should pull her aside. If you think that warrants what Dina did, then to me, like, we are not going to see eye to eye, because I think Dina escalated the situation to a level it did not need to go to, in a way that, in my opinion, is way more egregious and requires more accountability taking than anything Carolina did. But that's just my opinion, and Team Carolina for the win. Also, actually, one last thing. A lot of people on the internet, I saw people being like, let's be real, Carolina. Nobody ever was mean to you about your epilepsy. Like, that genuinely was not an unbelievable story to me. Knowing people in my life who are chronically ill, who are disabled, it's genuinely not that far-fetched that people are really not kind and compassionate and treat you like you're a burden. Or because, like, I'm sorry, that feels very, very realistic to me. And it feels really invalidating that people are like, that makes no sense. Why would anybody do that? Because it's like, just talk to disabled or chronically ill people. That is unfortunately something that people do have to go through, where they are treated like they're burdens or inconveniences or, like, you know, that is something that happens. And I think the fact that so many people refuse to mask is a perfect example of the way that people do not want to be, quote unquote, inconvenienced for disabled people. So, like, that's a little crazy to me that people think that that's so far-fetched. Let's be fucking for real. Anyways, that's all I have to say. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back next week for my thoughts on Yellow Jackets season 3, episode 6, and maybe some more thoughts on The Bachelor. Like, maybe I'll share my thoughts on Fantasy Suites, since the Yellow Jackets episode is the only thing I have to talk about. Maybe I'll share my thoughts on something else. I think I might be doing a deep dive on School Spirits season 2. I'll figure it out. If I have some downtime, I'll start preparing that. And whenever I'll do 2 episodes a week. Maybe next week if the Yellow Jackets... Maybe next week if my regular episode's short, that'll save me some time. So instead of finding something else to talk about to fill the rest of the episode, I'll just do a second long episode recapping, deep diving into School Spirit season 2. Maybe that's what I'll do. I'll figure it out, but thanks so much for tuning in. Means a lot. Hope you have a great week. You'll hear from me next week, sometime Wednesday or Thursday. My goal is Wednesday, but, like, this episode's going to be out Thursday, so probably maybe even Thursday. Who knows? But thanks so much for tuning in. Means a lot. Have a great week. You'll hear from me soon.